From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 14th day of August. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason on the Illinois State Fairgrounds in Springfield for Ag Day. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with John Hester. He's from L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Gary Schnitke from the University of Illinois will join us. He's gone back through the budgets and has some thoughts about which of the crops will make the most money this year and which may very well make more money next year. You'll want to stay put for that one. And along the way, we'll talk about ag and policy with the folks from the Illinois Corn Growers Association right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Look us up online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. Now, because I am on the Illinois State Fairgrounds at this time, I don't have settlement prices from the CME Group in Chicago. But just as the close came up about quarter after the hour, September corn was up 6 cents at $3.62.5. December 376.5, six higher. And the July of next year at $4.75, 6.25 cents higher. August soybeans up 8.25 as they closed out the day. Again, not settlement prices, but closed near the settlement prices at $8.61.75. November beans 878.5, 9.75 higher. And January at 890.25, up 9.5 cents. Next year's July 920, up 7.5 cents. The bean oil future 17 cents lower, 28.07. Bean meal at 335, up $7.20 for the day. Soft red winter wheat in the September at 539.75, 6.25 higher. July new crop at 585 on its close, but not settlement, up 3.75 cents. The hard red wheat finished the July contract at 602.75, 3.75 cents higher. Livestock futures finished the August at $107.97, up 77.5 cents. October at 108.72.5, 57.5 higher. And December futures at $112.42.5, up 42.5 cents. Feeder cattle in the September at 148.67.5, 22.5 cents higher. October at $148.90 for 100 pounds, a nickel lower for the day. Lean hogs in the August contract at $55 even, down 52.5 cents. The October at $51.85, they finished 20 cents higher on the afternoon. Of course, you're listening to Illinois Public Media. We're here at the State Fairgrounds in Springfield. Be sure to stay with us for the whole of the half hour for updates on what's happening here. And then the Sale of Champions will come up tonight. We'll try to post that to our website at around 5 o'clock this evening at willag.org. Here's what some of the other markets look like at this hour. Crude oil for the day at $67.19 a barrel, about 3 cents lower. Ethanol futures at $1.36.7, a penny and 4 tenths higher. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.13.1, that's about unchanged on the day. And gasoline on the RBOB is up a penny and 4 tenths at $2.02.9 per gallon. Natural gas at $2.95.9, up 2.9 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, 25,305, 90 points higher. U.S. dollar at 96.6 is up 0.349, and the S&P 500 at 2840.75 is up 15.25. Gold futures for the day at $1,193.60, up $2.30 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area as it comes from meteorologist Andrew Pritchard. Tonight, mostly cloudy, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, a low of 69 degrees, a south wind at about 5 miles an hour. Then tomorrow, mostly cloudy, some showers and thunderstorms likely, a high of 77, south winds at 5 to 10. And tomorrow evening, mostly cloudy, a chance of thunderstorms, and a low of 70 degrees on a south wind at 5 to 10 miles an hour. For Thursday, mostly cloudy, a chance of thunderstorms, a high of 82. A southwest wind on Thursday during the day at 5 miles an hour. On Thursday evening, the National Weather Service says there will be a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms. It will be mostly cloudy and will drop to a low of just about 66 degrees with the wind shifting to the northwest at 3 to 6 miles an hour. Friday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms comes up, mostly cloudy, and a low of 66.
WILL Agricultural Programming is supported by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to helping farm families succeed by providing reliable, consistent credit and financial services to rural communities and agriculture today and tomorrow. More information available at farmcreditil.com.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason here on the Illinois State Fairgrounds in Springfield for Ag Day. Let's check now to see what's been happening in Chicago at the CME Group. John Hester now joins us from L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Hey, John, thanks for being with us today. We really do appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you for having me, Todd. All right, at the present time, corn is up a nickel. Dece corn's up 5.5 cents. Beans are up. Nearby beans are up 8. November beans are up 9.5. And I think the main reason for the rally today, or one reason, is the crop ratings declined yesterday evening, and a bounce is healthy for the market because no market can go straight up or straight down, and I think that there may be a little dead cat bounce in this also, but there's some other reasons that the market should be rallying a little bit. A lot of people think that the government has overstated corn production in South America, the Ukraine, and Australia because of the corn drought, or the droughts they're experiencing in those countries. And technical buying has come in this morning, short covering. Soy meal has had a nice rally today. The negative side of the grain market today is the weather. They're forecasting that we could get an inch or two of rain in the next 3 or 4 days. And, a 2-inch rain here or 3-inch rain would just about make our bean crop and finish the corn off nicely.
You used a term, dead cat bounce. Exactly what does that mean?
It means that if it goes down too far, that, they'll come in and they'll buy it, take quick profits, and everybody... in my opinion, everybody thinks, well, the bottom's in, it's going to start up. And then about the time that you think that, then they pull the plug on it and it goes back down again.
So a dead cat bounce is kind of exactly what it would say, meaning we've gone down, we've hit a bottom, we bounced up, but really there isn't anything else yet that we see in the market that could propel it higher. Is that correct?
Right, that's correct, yes.
What are your expectations for the end of today's trade and then maybe looking into the rest of the week?
I think for the rest of the day they're going to stay strong. I don't know whether they'll sell off a little bit on the end, but I would guess corn's going to be up somewhere between 2 and 5 and beans somewhere between 5 and 10. The wheat market has bounced back a little bit today too. It's up 8 right now and it'll probably be up at least a nickel. Tomorrow I would expect maybe a little setback tomorrow would be my guess, especially in the beans, after a nice 2-day rally.
Hey, John, thanks so much for joining us today.
Okay, Todd, thank you. Have fun at the fair.
Oh, I will, and I am. John Hester, of course, is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. We're now joined by Aaron Johnson from Farm Credit Illinois, serving the 60 counties and the southern half of the state. Thank you so much. You've just... at your organization completed a survey looking at some benchmark levels for real estate and the values of farmland across your service area. Can you tell me a little bit about it, please?
We have. We've been doing this benchmark survey on an annual basis as long as I can remember now. And this year, I guess not surprisingly, it showed about a 3.5% drop in land values year over year. So the land market is still strong. A lot of demand for real estate out there. And it just isn't dropping as much as some people thought it would.
How much has it dropped?
Since we topped out in 2014, we show about a 15% drop from those top levels. Of course, that's spread out among the various types of real estate. The lower quality real estate has dropped more here recently than the flat black 1A stuff has. So we're on a gradual decline given the income situation, but it's still very strong. Land values are stable. There's a lot of demand, and we're just not seeing much happen in the market.
Do we know what the last quarter or the last year has looked like?
We just know right now, June 30 to June 30, So with the soybean price drop and some of the tariff issues, we have yet to have enough sales to really get a feel for what that's done.
What's your expectation going forward then?
I think there's the long-term stability and the foundation in agriculture is there. You can see that by some of the corn carryover that's even being discussed. The soybeans are a little more volatile right now with the tariff situation. I think it's going to take some time to sense what this is going to do. Certainly, if soybeans stay down and income continues to deteriorate, we'll see some more drop in cash rents and real estate values. If it stabilizes back up to a profitable level, there seems to be a pretty good floor under this real estate market.
Aaron, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Aaron Johnson is with Farm Credit Illinois. We're here at the Illinois State Fair. Gary Schnitke now joins us. Of course, thanks, Gary, for coming over to the State Fair here on Ag Day, coming out same place I did, Mumford Hall. On this day, up on the FarmDoc Daily website, I believe you've got some brand new numbers looking at the potential income for farmers in the state of Illinois. Can you tell me a little bit about what you did and what that may show for this year?
So for this year, we're probably going to have some pretty good incomes this year. And what's going to cause the 2018 incomes to be good is exceptionally good yields. So we've seen, USDA is projecting 207 for corn and 63 for soybeans. Both of those are record by ways. So the record yields, some pre-harvest, most farmers did some pre-harvest hedging. So we'll see some higher prices blended in with some very low prices. And a market facilitation payment, which will add revenue and give us some pretty good incomes for this year.
So a couple of notes there. Those yield numbers are for the state of Illinois, not for the national yield. But still, national yields are extraordinarily big. You mentioned the market facilitation payment. That's part of the $12 billion package. You obviously put some number in there, though I don't think we have really a good idea of what it might be. What are you using?
So right now I'm using $20 an acre, which is pretty conservative. So you've heard some rumors of, you know, like a dollar payment for soybeans, and that would obviously be closer to $63 an acre, $60 an acre, $70 an acre. I'm a bit skeptical of the higher numbers simply because you go through $12 billion pretty quick. So that $20 an acre for both corn and soybeans would be a national $4 billion. So, you know, it might be $6 billion, it might be $7 billion, but, you know, that's sort of the ballpark of what we're putting in there. And again, $20 an acre, both corn and soybeans, really does help income for 2018.
Yeah, so just to be clear, you're talking about using $4 billion, $6 billion, $7 billion of the 12 that's available for corn and soybeans combined, and your number at $4 billion is $20 for both of them, and it would be split probably more for soybeans than corn. But once you've done that and you put the equal payment, I guess, $20 in, how well does corn do this year compared to soybeans in the state of Illinois?
So it looks like soybeans will do better than corn this year, simply because of higher yields and that market facilitation payment tending more to soybeans. But next year is the year when we're going to begin to have to make those acreage decisions, because given bid prices now for fall 2019, you will be looking at corn being more profitable than soybeans.
I think I saw the budget numbers and they look like making, and I assume this is, and you'll have to tell me for sure, on a Central Illinois high producing farm, $32 an acre for corn, $44 an acre for soybeans, so it's not a big number.
No, it's not a big number, and that would be for cash rent farmland. The key thing there is that corn is positive. Soybeans are actually down a little bit because of lower prices from previous years. So corn came up and was positive this year, and the two are very close to one another in terms of profitability this year.
Thanks so much, Gary.
You're welcome.
Gary Schnitke, of course, is an agricultural economist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. He joins us here at the State Fairgrounds. It's Ag Day, and many of the folks are around from the associations, including those that are part of the Corn Growers, both the Marketing Board and the Illinois Corn Growers Association. We have with us Aaron Carlson, who is from the northern part of the state, and then from Mazan, I'll call that in the northeastern part of the state. Paul Jeske is with us. We're going to take up a couple of other topics. We've talked a little bit about finances with Aaron Johnson from Farm Credit Illinois. Gary talked some about what we expect the crops are going to look like this year, but we've got some policy issues to work through as well. Ethanol, of course, Paul, we'll get to you in just a moment. That's a big issue every year for farmers in the state of Illinois. And at this point, policy is a truly big issue, Aaron. In Washington, D.C., some of the numbers that Gary's been working with on his budget show that maybe there might be a $20 payment. I think he said that was conservative as it relates to the $12 billion package that the Trump administration has put together to compensate for farmers for trade and tariff issues. How do we go about finding out what those numbers are? How soon do we think that Sonny Perdue, the Secretary of Agriculture, might make an announcement? And are you working with them as part of the Illinois Corn Growers to come up with what that package might look like?
As far as our role in trying to figure out the numbers, I'm not sure we're going to have a whole lot to do with that, to be completely honest. As soon as we know something, we'll definitely pass it on. As far as the whole issue with how much money we're going to get short term here, I mean, ultimately, we want fair trade, free trade, not aid. And I mean, that's kind of where we've been for the longest time. I do appreciate, and I think most growers do appreciate, the effort by the administration to try to curtail our woes here as we move forward. But as far as any information, as far as having an inside track on how much that might be, I would have to say that I don't have that.
Over the last year, the Trump administration has periodically said, hey, we're close to getting a NAFTA deal signed, the North American Free Trade Agreement. This time around, they're saying we're close, but with Mexico. Do you think it's really true?
Yes, I do. I do believe it's very true. And I actually think we're going to see something here in 6 weeks, maybe 2 months at the very latest. From what we're hearing, Mexico has been pushing very hard to try to get this politically done. And so I do believe that it will happen. We'll see something here very soon. And some of the things that I've heard should be fairly or very friendly to the ag industry. And I do believe that as we move closer to a deal with Mexico, I do believe that Canada is going to step up their effort here. And I think they've been working on it also very hard, too.
How important is it that this continues to be a North American free trade agreement rather than a bilateral agreement with Mexico and one with Canada, or does it make very much a difference?
My personal opinion, I think it's important that it stays intact the way that it is right now. You hear out of the administration that, you know, it could be two bilaterals and they'd be fine and everybody goes on and everything's happy, but I do think at the end of the day it'll still will be viewed as NAFTA. I don't think it'll be two separate entities, but I guess we'll have to see what happens here in the near future with that.
What do you think and the organization think about the Trump administration's position as it relates to China and the potential damage it could do to trade across the planet over the long run?
It's going to be, the China thing is an extremely hard one to swallow for the ag industry right now, mainly because it's no secret that the ag products that we export go to China, a lot of them, particularly the soybeans. And they were importing a fair amount of ethanol and had plans to import a lot more ethanol. Right now, that's basically shut off. The optimist in me says where one door closes, maybe three more open. Low prices generally do stimulate demand in other ends, other areas of the world, but that's a pretty big door to fill, you know. So as far as that stuff goes, we are starting to see the flow kind of go in different areas, but that's been a difficult one. And as far as how far down the road this is going to hurt our trade for the future with China is probably my bigger concern. It may take 2, 4, 6, maybe 10 years to try to rebuild these relationships, depending on how long this thing goes. So,
thanks so much, Aaron. Aaron Carlson is the president of the Illinois Corn Growers Association. He is from the Rockford area in the state of Illinois. From Mazan is Paul Jeske. He is the president of the Illinois Corn Marketing Board. You're tasked with making sure that there are open markets of some sort for use of corn. You'd like to talk a little bit about ethanol. There are some changes in Washington, D.C. within the last couple of months. A new U.S. EPA administrator acting is in place. Andrew Wheeler was at the Iowa State Fair yesterday. I think he may be more acceptable to corn growers across the United States than his predecessor, but you give me an idea of what you think this looks like for ethanol going forward.
Well, that's the question. Will he be more supportive of ethanol than the past administrator had been? We were a little surprised. The past administrator met with us many times, had a very open door, but we just didn't realize some of the things that were going on after that door was shut and we left the office. And speaking specifically about all the waivers that were granted, 2.25 billion gallons of ethanol, actually, waivers, small refiner waivers were granted for the years of 16 and 17. And, you know, that's 800 million bushels of corn grind that we do not have because those waivers were granted and not, as the law said, redistributed to other blenders, other refiners. So, no, the proof will be in what the actions actually are. As far as another area, the RVP, the reed vapor pressure waiver that would allow sales of E15 year-round, the president has said that he's in favor of that. He said that during the campaign. He said that again a year ago. He's restated that within the last 30 days. He says right now it's up to the EPA to decide how to do that, that he's in favor of it. But we're wanting to hold his feet to the fire a bit on that. With the bullets that we've taken with the NAFTA problems, the trade tariff issues with China, many other countries around the world, agriculture's on that front line right now, taking those hits first. And as our export markets have been hurt so tremendously by these tariffs, E15 seems like a no-brainer that would not cost anything. It would actually save money for the American consumer, as ethanol is 40 to 50 to 60 cents a gallon cheaper than what gasoline is. So the more ethanol we add to gasoline, the cheaper it should be. So let's add more ethanol, make a higher octane fuel, and have it be cheaper for the consumer. We think that's a pretty good deal.
You say that actions will be the proof of how the administrator works. The president's saying it's up to the administrator to make this decision. That seems a little out of character for the president. He usually makes a decision and then says, hey, go do it. And the administrator to this point has said, as it relates to ethanol and its usage, and the waivers in particular, which have already been put forth as a potential, that he's going to stay with what administrator put forth back earlier in the year for the coming 18-19 season. So I guess maybe some of the actions not all that appropriate in your opinion.
Well, we've not seen favorable actions yet anyway. Now, I want to give the man the benefit of the doubt starting out here. But Todd, you hit the key. I believe the president has much more control over that than what he's willing to show right now. Let me go in a corner and speculate here for you. Maybe this will be brought up and these issues will be solved before November. This president is very politically savvy. He doesn't often give away something if there isn't something to be gained by that. And I'm hopeful that will be the case, that this can be a win-win for both of us. If he sees it as a win for him to grant us a waiver in October sometime, I'm all for it. Let's get her done.
Thank you so much, Paul.
You're welcome.
And thank you as well, Aaron.
Thank you.
Aaron Carlson is the president of the Illinois Corn Growers Association. Paul Jeske is the president of the Illinois Corn Marketing Board. We're here at the Illinois State Fair. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. We'll be back in just 2 minutes.
It's National Creamsicle Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1848, Congress created the Oregon Territory, an area encompassing present-day Oregon, Idaho, Washington, and parts of western Montana and Wyoming. The territory's rich agricultural resources were a magnet for a diverse group of immigrants and settlers. In 1873, the first issue of Forest and Stream was published. The oversized 16-by-11-inch publication featured many articles early on by George Sears that made popular canoeing and environmentalism. The magazine merged with Field and Stream in 1930. In 1941, Paul Sabatier died, an organic chemist. His work led to the development of the margarine, oil, hydrogenation, and synthetic methanol industries. And in 2003, the largest power blackout in U.S. history swept across Ohio, Michigan, and Canada, and then spread to Connecticut, New Jersey, and New York, leaving 50 million people without electricity for 24 hours and longer. Billions of dollars were lost in revenue. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Don Day. He's a day weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Clear skies here at the Illinois State Fairground today. Don, it's going to get hot, maybe 87, but there's a nice breeze. Not too bad for a state fair, and I suppose not bad weather for the month of August. What can you tell me about the rest of the Corn Belt?
Well, I tell you, as we take a look ahead over the next 3 weeks and the last parts of this month, really nearly ideal conditions are going to be found. Yes, we've got some warm days, but more often than not, it's looking like most of the central part of the nation is going to have averaged, even slightly below average temperatures here over the next coming week. So we're going to round out the summer with no end of the summer heat wave at all.
Can I concentrate on a couple of places that I know you've been watching, because they're just in your area, probably due north in the Canadian Plains. They've had an awful lot of dry weather in that part of the world. What can you tell me about that? And maybe because you're really close to some of those fires there, about the conditions on the ground and what kind of fires you expect the fighters to have to work through over the next couple of weeks.
Well, first of all, for some of the Northern Plains and some of Canada, there is some possibility of some rain here in the coming weeks with some of those cool fronts coming in. So I think there's a little bit of help up there. Maybe not as much as they'd like to want to see, but there's going to be some moisture up there. For the fire areas, you know, this time of year is one of the driest times of year for parts of the Pacific Northwest and Central and Northern California. So there's really not going to be a lot of help in those big fire areas from at least the chances of rain prospects are not looking good.
You know, my daughter lives in Fargo, North Dakota, and earlier in the week it was she thought cloudy at first there, but it was, you just couldn't see, I think, but maybe about 3 miles, all smoke from the fires that are burning to the west. What kind of impact does this have on the weather, if any at all?
Well, you know, wildfire smoke does have an impact. It has since the dawn of time, with that smoke going into the air, the particulates and blocking the sun and doing everything else. On day-to-day weather changes, it's not going to have much of an impact with real weather. Long-term, climate-wise, yes. Mostly it's a visibility situation, making people uncomfortable who have allergies and do not do well with smoke. Because I tell you, this is one extensive smoke cover that goes from the central and northern portions of California right across all of the lower 48 states, including southern Canada. And it's going to be a week or two before it has a chance to get cleared out.
Does it tend to keep heat in because of ground cover, or does it tend to keep or cool things down because not as much sunlight tends to penetrate?
It tends to block the sunlight more than being able to trap the heat, and that's something that is something of an impact. But also the particulates in the air really can make a big difference over time. The more particulates you put in the air from that smoke particles, it acts as what we call condensation nuclei, which makes it easier for clouds and precipitation.
Hey, thanks so much for the explanations. I appreciate it, Don. We'll talk with you again in another week.
Sounds good.
That's Don Day. He is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming.